Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dry land program? Swim Strong Dry Land is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dry land programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%.
Ron, mate, look at us twinning out with the
sport. Oh, yeah.
Appreciate you representing the brand, man. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, tell everybody where you're at today.
I'm in California, Berkeley, just in my apartment, but I'm fortunate enough to be on the podcast with Brett Hawk.
I appreciate it, man. This is fun. This is overdue for us. I mean, we've spoken in the past for sure, but we haven't really done a full one like this before. Hey, first up, congratulations on Doha, man. You were fantastic out there.
Thank you. It was definitely a ton of fun.
Yeah, yeah. First up, what was your initial reason for going? I mean, a lot of, I would say, kind of superstars, a lot of big names, especially from the U.S., decided not to go. Why did you decide to go?
I felt that it'd be a great like confidence booster just going into trials, because last year at Worlds was the first year ever that I didn't drop time. So I'm like, I need to make sure that I'm able to still do what I need to do. So I wanted an opportunity to go fast and just get more experience internationally before we got to trials.
Right. I'll stay on Doha and we'll go back after this. But in terms of just your overall experience at the championships, how was it overall?
I mean, Doha is beautiful.
Yeah.
So wish I could have gotten out a little bit more, but you know, we're there to swim, we do our job and we leave. But it was a ton of fun just getting to meet a ton of new people that haven't had that international experience. And like, we didn't elect captains, but I felt like Nick and I sort of like stepped into that leadership role, because I mean, these are high school girls that we were with. Some of them have never done prelim, semifinal, final, and they crushed it.
Yeah,
it was absolutely insane.
I was going to say that, like, you know, a fact that is kind of overlooked here is U.S. ended up on the top of the medal tally here again.
Yeah.
Crazy, eh?
With, like, four returning athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a warning shot to the rest of the world. And look, I like stirring the pot. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes I'm looked at as American. I have American citizenship. I've lived here many, many years. I've contributed to this country. I love this country, okay? And sometimes I love pumping America up. I was born in Australia. I represented Australia at the Olympics. Sometimes I love pumping them up. And the reason why I love pumping both up is because it's a clash, right? Like, I love that. Like, I love the fact that you've got these two superpowers that I'm connected to in a way. And so at times it seems like I favor Australia, but let's swing it back here for a second. U.S. is still the number one swimming nation in the world. There's no doubt about that. And I think what we've done here again is we've proved it again, right?
Yeah. I mean, the Aussies didn't really send their A squad either. I mean, if Kayla McKeon would have been there, it would have been a very different meet. I hope that the U.S. still would have come up on top, but I mean, it's great for viewership as well. Like,
yeah,
it's boring to just have the U.S. sweep everything. Like, we got to have some competition.
Right. Right. I saw a photo of you standing on the block, you know, in a relay, and you had your arm up like this, it just looked like you're super proud to represent the US too. You like, you look like you're a guy that loves to put on that cap.
I do. You know, ever since like 2019 when I made the junior team, am I blurry for you too?
No, you're good.
Okay, cool. I didn't get to travel with the junior team. We were going to Budapest for Junior Worlds, and Jack Armstrong ended up taking my spot. But then I think it was long ago. I don't remember how I ended up squeaking onto the junior team, but I just wanted to wear that cap with my flag on it.
Mm.
And so I take a lot of pride in my country and the ability to represent the United States. It's what I love to do. And that's why relays will always be my favorite. So I was so excited to do all the relays in Doha. Mm.
All the relays is definitely something that, you know, when you say all the relays, you actually swam on the 4x200 freestyle relay. And Hunter, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you'd ever been under 150 long course flat start before, and you pumped out a 145 on the relay.
Yeah, my best time was 2019. I went 153.9 in the 200.
What?
So no, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but Carson came up to me and he said, "Hey, we need a fourth guy on this relay. Will you do it?" I'm like, "I'll do it, but I do not know what I'm capable of. I will give you my best effort, and that is a promise. But my best effort could be 145. It could be 150. And I don't know."
Hang on a second. Like, you even conceived a 145? Like, to me, that sounds crazy to even think that you could do that, right? Like, you'd never, like you said, you've never been under 153. 145 is light years ahead of 153. So, like, to even just be thinking that's incredible, isn't it?
I was actually really proud just how far I've developed as an athlete.
Right.
It was something that I was really impressed with like Charlie Clark at OSU. And it was something Matt did a lot of too. He'd be like, "All right, I want you to go a 23 on this 50. Short course yards, of course, mm-hmm. but now 22, now 21, now 27. And just, it's a distance swimmer skill that they're able to do that. And I never could. And that's something I've gotten a lot better at. And while I was in Doha talking to the coaches about this, I told the coaches in the prelims that I would love a 147, but I would, like, I'm hoping 147 low, 146 high. That's what I told the coaches in the morning. And then I went 146 high.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then in the finals, I said, "Okay, I've learned how to swim this. I would love a 145 or 146 low."
Mm.
So I was pretty much spot on with all of my time predictions throughout the meet. I told the coaches that if they lead me off the mixed free, mixed free relay, mm-hmm. that I would go 47.8.
Wow. Wow. I mean, what range? I mean, we'll talk about the range in a second, but I'm just stuck on this 200. I'm fascinated with it. You said you learned how to swim it during the race. I mean, you're at the World Championships and you're learning how to swim a 200. You don't train for a 200 freestyle, do you?
I train freestyle.
Okay, yeah.
And I've wanted to swim it because my goal was always to be on every single relay. But no, I was never a mid-distance swimmer going into college, and even through most of my college, I was a 50-100 freestyler. Didn't even do the 100 back until like halfway through sophomore year.
Wow.
But incredible. No, I love relays, and to be on the 8-3 relay, you got to be able to swim a 200. So I decided let's throw down and see what I can do.
Well, when you swam that 145 at night, how did you swim it? How were you able to manage the speed and the endurance and kind of being able to get out and finish at the same time? How did you manage to swim it?
Well, truthfully, I just asked a lot of advice from the actual 200 freestylers at the meet. Absolutely butcher his last name if I tried to pronounce it, but Lucas, he's trained at Cal.
Henva.
Yes, thank you. I talked to him. I'm like, hey, they put me on it again. What do I do? And so he told me, like, on that last wall, make sure to use your underwaters. And then as the race was happening, I was watching Luke Hobson lead off. And I'm like, okay, so he's not fully trying yet. And I watched where he started trying. And I looked at the splits. And I just sort of knew what I would have to do in order to go those times.
Yeah, I guess, like, you know, part of what you do is speed training, and you learn speed awareness, and you learn speed control. And so, like you said, you know what it looks like, you know what it feels like, you know how to apply it. It was just then kind of figuring out in your head and then getting an understanding of how does that feel for me at that point, you know?
I would have loved to copy my race after Carson with that 143, but, you know, taking over from him, I had no idea how fast he was actually going.
Right. Now, in your backstroke, you're not leg heavy on that either, are you? And you didn't seem to be leg heavy on your freestyle. Is that the way you kind of equate it? Like you set your rhythm from up front?
Yeah, I'm definitely like an upper body driven swimmer. I'm one of the worst kickers on my team, including some of the women. But that's always been how it is. I feel like I have a strong kick, but not a fast one.
It applies well to your stroke. It fits in well with your stroke, but if you isolate it, it's not particularly strong.
Yeah, I'm not one of the best pullers, and I'm not one of the best kickers. I'm very rhythm driven. So when everything comes together, that's when good things happen.
Yeah. Nice. Now, you and I have had discussions, and you've got an understanding. You're wearing the brand right now, the Sprint Revolution. In terms of just what that means to you and how you apply it to your everyday life, like, to me, we're getting lost in the fact that it's just about swimming fast, right? Like, swimming fast is so much more than that. You're very technical. You're very intuitive. You have an acute awareness. And at Cal, you do ranges of speeds, and you do ranges of resistance training, and you do, you know, it's a volume of work that is kind of put together that, you know, encapsulates everything to create an awesome sprinter like yourself. So, like, in terms of your just awareness of you know, the Sprint Revolution itself and how it applies to you, what would you say are really important points for people to remember?
Something that I didn't really start doing until I got to Cal was understanding that in order to get faster, it's not just as simple as doing more yards or more meters. Like, you have to break down everything.
Right.
And I've done a ton of work with Coach Marsh, and we just watched my stroke and we broke it down to the very basics. I mean, and that was something I did with Matt too, because I had a terrible streamline. So like, even at the most elite levels, it's the only way to get faster when you are this fast is you have to start fixing the smaller things.
Right. Right. So it's the attention to detail too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing, I know you loved Pan's 46.8, but it looked effortless. Probably the prettiest freestyle I have ever seen out of anyone. I mean, sprinting used to just be like, not ugly, but just slap happy and just muscling your way through it. Right. But Popovici and Pan and like Jack Alexi, they sort of, they start swimming it prettier and it's working.
Finesse. Yeah. Finesse. Yeah. Technically beautiful. Yeah. Just swimming with finesse. Very connected. Yeah. I think you actually raced Pan in the relay. Were you two together on that leg?
For the mixed free, yes. He got me by 3 or 4 tenths, but he was also like 3 or 4 lanes over. I would have loved to be next to him, because I think just racing somebody, I probably could have gone a little bit faster. No way I would have gone 47.2 or whatever he went, but I mean, I pride myself in being able to get my hand on the wall first.
Yeah, you seem to be that type of guy that thrives in a competitive environment. And it doesn't matter. And like, the faster the athlete, the better they are, the more you rise to the occasion, the more you want to race. And and psychologically, how do you account for that in your head? It's just, it stimulates you to race the best guys.
I just find something extra, like, especially for relays. It's one thing to do your own race and let the failure fall on yourself if you don't win. But when you have three other guys that are all relying on you, and with relays, it's not just those three others, but it's the prelim swimmers and it's your country all relying on you to do your job. And so that's sort of like, you don't really think when you're swimming. Some of my best races, I don't remember anything from them. But when I see somebody next to me, I instantly like come back into my own head and I'm like, okay, just, I don't care how much it hurts. Like, I need to touch the wall before this person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love that attitude. And it's a great lesson to learn. I think pure races go back to that, don't they? There's so many things to think about. There's so much detail and there's so much pressure. But what I find pure races, like an Isaac Cooper, like yourself, you know, guys that just love to race, they kind of forget all that stuff and put it aside. And they just go back to the love of competing and just, you know, one versus one. They don't even make it against the eight. It's just like, who am I next to? Who's in the race? Who can I challenge myself with? And it seems like you're that type of guy too. You get up there and just love to race and forget about all the stuff that can really drag you down in competition, right?
Yeah. I've always been a racer. So that's one of my strongest suits and works out well for me in training because I happen to have Jack Alexi and Bjorn and Destin and Murph and all people that consistently train better than I do. So I'm always having somebody to race and to push me.
They do. And I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you gave them props, and I'm glad you kind of identify that in yourself in terms of they consistently train better than you. And what I would say about that is just like in terms of the quality of the effort that they can put out consistently, yes, it's more than what you can do. That doesn't say that they're better athletes than you. It's just, they may have just a better capacity. So how do you justify that in your thinking and in when you stand up next to them on the blocks? Because it's always, confidence is generally about if you feel like you did more than somebody else or if you outwork somebody. That's kind of how confidence has been perceived. But you freely admit, like, these guys outwork me, but I can compete with them. So how do you put the two and two together?
Honestly, I don't know. You know, going against, we'll call it Murph.
Right.
I don't often get to compete against him because I don't often swim backstroke in practice.
Right.
But in the weight room, this dude does the entire rack. And I mean, there are times when I'll go and I'll like, we'll do dumbbell bench or something, and I'll go and pick some heavy dumbbells and I'm feeling good about myself. And then Abby comes over and does the exact same weight. And like, it's always interesting, but my training partners are Jack and Bjorn, where Jack and I have very similar speeds on top of the water,
right?
But Bjorn far exceeds my ability underwater.
Right.
So I love being in the middle of them because, you know, Bjorn will be the first one up and Jack and I are racing on the surface, and then it just sort of like, the entire race is just dead even by the end.
Right. Well, I think why I bring this up, Hunter, is, you know, I do a lot of work with younger kids too. And I want, and younger kids listen to this and coaches listen to this. And so not necessarily just being about Hunter Armstrong, but a lot of kids may identify like you and say, like, I'm not the best trainer. I don't win every repeat. And, you know, the coach wouldn't, you know, tell me how great I am all the time because maybe I'm not the guy that's standing out all the time. But when it comes to standing behind the blocks and believing in myself, I can get the job done and I can compete and I can, doesn't matter if that person's lifting twice as much in the gym or swimming, you know, twice as much yardage or whatever it is. Like, when I'm standing behind the blocks, I believe in myself. And so what I'm trying to get at is that there's probably a lot of kids that maybe get discouraged in practice because they're not the best. And so now they've got someone like Hunter Armstrong, who's a world champion that they can relate to and say, wow, like he's just like me. He's not the best in training, but he's the best in the world when it comes to racing.
Yeah. I mean, it's, what my old coach Matt would always say is you don't have to be great every day, just be good most days. Like, yeah, I don't like to lose. I think that's across the board with most athletes. We just don't like to lose. So there are some days when Jack will just absolutely wipe the floor with me. And then others, if I can just win 125 or 150, then it's a successful day.
Right, right. Yeah, you find the small successes. There you go. I like that, right? Like you say, okay, I'm not going to get these eight reps, but I'm going to get one off you, and I'm going to feel like I was successful at that point. And you're right. Like I think I could relate to it a little bit too. Like I wasn't the best trainer too, but I love to race. And I don't think everybody has that in them. I think everybody's competitive. I don't think everybody's ultra competitive. And I think you and I and other people like us sprinters who are just kind of pure sprinters, they call us pure sprinters, we can find something extra in competition because we love competition. Like we love it more than anything, you know, and we thrive in that. And so there's definitely just kids out there. I just want them to understand that you don't always have to be number one in practice, but you have to have that passion and that willingness to want to compete at the highest level. And if you have that, just keep that, because that's something that'll follow you your whole career, like you're doing now, you know, winning world titles. And take us through the medals that you won throughout the championship in Doha.
I think I got seven. It was two individuals and all five relays.
Wow.
You know, the 100 back, I was pretty worried about. I feel like with the amount of rest I got was not enough for backstroke. Backstroke is very leg heavy, and it's also one of the, like, it was the second event I did. I did the prelim of the 4x1 free, and I was really happy with it. It was like a 10th off my best time. But then my second event was backstroke, and I didn't do what I thought I could do. And so then I'm like, okay, 50 backs the last day. Let's just do these relays. And all the relays went really well. Then the 50 back was the last day. And I mean, Isaac, smacked the lane like twice and still cooked me. It was incredible.
Yeah, he's a pure racer too, man. He's on my Sprint Revolution team down at the Premier League swimming this weekend. We've got a team going down in Australia, and he's my team captain. So I'm pretty proud to have him as the leader.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize it until I looked at the pictures afterward. He is jacked.
Yeah, you got to be on our team. You got to be jacked.
It was ridiculous, but
yes.
No, I mean, I'm pretty happy with the 50 back. Obviously, like I want to win. That's who I am. But Isaac got me.
You had your own issues with the lane line, even in the 100 back. Just backstroke in general, it seemed like you were rubbing up on that lane line pretty good there, mate.
Yeah, the ceiling is crooked. It was terrible.
Yeah, talk to us about that. You go to some venues and you can follow a line, but on this one, it seemed like things were going this way across, so you couldn't really follow a direct path, right?
Yeah. I smacked it in the 100 back. It honestly made me not want to swim backstroke that meet because it was just impossible. Like I'd rather swim outside where you have no landmark rather than having a misleading one. Because you feel like you're going straight and then you either smack the lane line or you just catch out of your peripherals. You can see the lane line.
Yeah.
At least when there's nothing there, you find something else.
Yeah. Right. Now, listen, you won a world title in backstroke and you beat your teammate, Hugo Gonzalez, which was really cool. You know, you guys trained together at times, but you're teammates and that's awesome. Different countries, you know, Spain and USA, but coming together like that. Without me saying too much, how do you feel about the world title itself in terms of calling yourself world champion? Now, how do you feel about it?
You know, at Worlds, Olympics, there's always going to be people missing.
Right.
It'll never be a perfect scenario for anybody or any country.
Yep.
So I am proud to call myself a world champion, but I also recognize that without Murphy, without Chacon, without Zhu Jiayu, that I may not be the fastest in the world. I was just the fastest at that world champs. And there's still a lot of pride that comes with that, but it also keeps you hungry.
Yeah. I like that perspective. That's good. You know? And I think it's completely accurate. You're right. You're world champion. You went to the world championships and you won the world title and you're world champ. Again, it might be a situation in Paris where not everybody's there, but you're still going to be Olympic champ. It's not about everybody being there. It's about winning that title. And you did that. And you should be damn proud of that. All the medals, the seven of them. The other thing I think you and USA Swimming should be proud of is winning the championship. Like I said, I want to come back to that. So obviously to win a championship, you've got to compete better than anybody else. You got to win more medals, but you got to do stuff behind the scenes really, really well too. And I want to give USA Swimming some love here in terms of the way they managed it and put it together and even got the best out of you as athletes. How did they manage to do that? What were some of the things behind the scenes that we don't necessarily see that were going on?
There's a lot of like small things that I'm not able to say because it's sort of like tradition within USA Swimming.
Right.
Okay. But we really tried to embrace that. Yeah, we recognize that this isn't a normal Worlds. A lot of people are missing. A lot of new people are here. And so we just tried really hard to sort of give them the full experience of what it is to be Team USA. So we have little traditions that we do, and we typically do that on our training camp beforehand, which we didn't get.
So you guys just flew straight to Doha?
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight there. But I was texting Nick Fink on the flight, and I'm like, hey, man, I think it's really important that we do these things. Because Rachel Klinker, who had an outstanding meet, she was texting me beforehand. She's like, hey, I'm nervous. I'm like, don't be. Like, this is, you're gonna love every minute of this because it is an experience unlike anything I've ever experienced to be a part of Team USA. And so yeah, I just, behind the scenes, we just really tried to make them feel like they were Team USA because they were. They were put on the team to represent our country. So we wanted everything to go the same way as if it were an Olympics.
Right. There's an incredible sense of national pride, you know, within Team USA. Anytime you get that cap, it does something to people. I don't know. It's very strange, but like people rise to the occasion when they put that cap on and they come together. You don't really notice, you know, that's very, very competitive within the U.S., who swims where, who swims for who, that type of thing. When you guys come together and you put that cap on, you never see any of that stuff. It's just Team USA, and it's so powerful. And it's, like I said, that image of you standing on the block with your arm up, waiting for someone to come in, and you're exchanging. I mean, what a powerful image that was. It was one of the best from the championship. I thought, I don't know who took that photo, but give them some props. But
Mike Lewis.
That was Mike Lewis. Of course it was. I'm sorry, Mike. I apologize, my friend. Of course it was Mike Lewis. He's a genius. Go to his Instagram, check out his images. Mike Lewis is the best. But yeah, beautiful image. You should put that, you know, somewhere in your house. It's a winner. But yeah, well, that's good, you know. And the other thing I think that USA Swimming does really well is just they're organized and it's put together really well. And they do a good job of making sure everybody understands their role and doing it really well and putting each swimmer in the best possible chance to be at their best. You know, you have everything you need, right? Like there's nothing you guys need for once you go to a championship, is there?
No, I mean, we have like four or five massage therapists. We have our sports psych. We have doctors. Like if you need something, it will you'll get it.
Yep. Yep. That's awesome, man. What do you have now between the trials, you know, between Doha and the trials? What type of competition are you going to go to between now and trials?
So I was pulled out of Westmont, just it was too close to Worlds, and I really need to get back to training and rebuild so that I can do it again in, gosh, like 5-6 months.
Yeah.
So I have national team camp in Colorado in 2-3 weeks, and then my next and only competition before Olympic trials will be San Antonio.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn to swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vint. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming.
We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net.
Now, you have options now. I mean, is the 200 even something that you would consider for the Olympics? No? Freestyle, that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Important distinction there. I don't know. It used to be so simple. Just like 50 free, 100 free, 100 back. That was always what I do. And now I have to sort of rediscuss and like talk to my coaches and rethink. And because now there's strategy that comes into this.
Mm.
Because the 2 free and the 100 back conflict.
Right.
And I would love to be on the 8 free relay in Paris, but I don't want to throw down the 200 free and then miss the 100 back, because now right. I've lost everything. Right. I'm not on the team. I can't do any of it. So
right.
I think I'm going to race the 200 free in San Antonio, and we'll get a gauge of, well, I mean, I have to race it in San Antonio because I don't have an Olympic trial cut. So
right. Yeah. You got to get under that 153, mate, first of all.
Yeah. I feel confident I can break 150.
Okay.
But, my lineup's all weird now. Eventually I want to add the 200 back, but that conflicts with the 100 free, and I want to be on the 4 free relay. So, I mean, if it were an option to do relay only for all the relays, I would in a heartbeat. I'd give up all of my individuals to just do 5 relays.
Really?
Oh, and wouldn't think about it.
Talk me through that. Why?
I love relays so much. Always been my favorite thing to do. I feel like I'm competing for Team USA rather than myself.
Right.
It's fun to go up against Murph and the rest of the world and try to be a world champion and an individual. And to truly race the best in the world. But for relays, it's not about me. It's about what country. I may not ever be the best swimmer in the world, but I'm a part of the best country in the world.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Makes sense, man. And to represent that is powerful. And They need races. They've had races like you in the past, people that just love to race. Jason Lezak pulled something out that no one had ever seen before because he just loves representing his country and swimming on that relay and created history, one of the greatest swims of all time. So I put you in that kind of same category of like you put Hunter on the block and put him in a situation where you need something special. I have no doubt that you could pull it out like that, you know? So yeah, they need you there and they want you on those relays. So first mission is to qualify in the backstrokes and there's competition there. You're world champion, but to make the US team is almost like winning a world title. You gotta beat out the best. And so it's always been that way with the US trials, but especially in your event, there's a lot of guys that can contend here. How do you approach it? How do you attack it? You know, are you solely focused on yourself and what you can do? Are you looking at your competitors and trying to figure out? How do you look at the trials themselves?
You have to be on your best for trials. Last year, I was not on my best for trials, and I was fortunate enough to squeak onto the team. But I can't do that again, which is why I felt really strongly that I need to go to Doha because I need to know exactly what I'm capable of before I get to trial. So there won't be any doubt in my mind of whether I can do it or not.
You won the world title in 52.7, did you?
6.8.
Pretty close. 200.
Yeah. Well, Hugo was 7.0.
Okay, right, there we go. Hugo, yeah, that's a silver. We're not gonna, yeah. So 52.68. I'm of the belief that to make the U.S. Olympic team, you're gonna have to go faster than that to be top two.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm calling 52.3.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's for the second spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't want to have the mentality of swimming for second either, do you?
No. So I mean, my goal is. If I go 51, I'm making the team. Even if Murphy goes 51 too.
Yeah, 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 that's right. If you go 51, you're making the team. There's not going to be three guys going 51, but there definitely could be two for sure.
Yeah, I think I think a majority of our A final is going to be around the 52.5 to 52.8 area, but I think first through fourth is going to be 52.0 to 52.3.
Now, how are you approaching the rounds? How do you manage the rounds? You know, heat, semis, finals. What's your mentality with that?
Well, I've gotten in trouble for that mentality a couple times.
You're learning.
Yeah, that's the thing. I am still learning. I mean, my first international trip ever was Tokyo, and I've only been swimming year-round, like training to be a swimmer since... like I think 2019 was my first 4 year.
Wow. So five years, basically less than 5 years, you've been a full-time swimmer.
Yeah. So these guys have been doing it forever. And so I really have like relied on Murph to like, just as a mentor, like in short course worlds, I'm like, hey, obviously my warm-up is not working. What do you do? How early do you get in? Like when you start stretching, what is your warm-up? And that's going to look different for everybody, but I needed a foundation to build upon. So I chose Murph.
How's he been with that? How's Ryan Murphy? Like, you know, he's a teammate, he's a US captain. I mean, he's a team player, but you're also competitive. So like, how is the relationship in terms of the sharing of information, pushing each other, holding each other accountable with that?
I think it's great. I mean, I don't really get to train with him that often, right, but yeah. One memory that always comes to mind is it was last year, just a random Thursday morning, and Coach Marsh was videotaping us underwater. And so Murph and I are in the hot tub and he's showing us these videos. And I pointed out on Murph, I'm like, hey, your hand is catching weird right here. He's like, oh yeah. And then he's helping me with my underwaters. And so Murph and I complement each other very well because he's a phenomenal 200 backstroker, but he doesn't really go down to the 50. Whereas I have a great 50, but I really don't want to go up to the 200. Right. So we meet in the middle, mm-hmm. where his mid distance helps him and my speed helps me. And so I just think we mesh really well in helping each other in that middle 100.
Yeah. And then you come in the middle, it's a clash of the Titans with these two giants. But you favor speed and you do train speed, but your race strategy and your backstroke's interesting. You don't go out the fastest, but you come home really strong. How does that work out?
I just think maybe it's how I'm built. It just takes me a lot of time to build speed. I can't just, like, that's one of the reasons I dropped the 50 free is like everyone can just hit the water and already be at top speed. Like Jack, I can't do that.
It not the world champion, man. Not Bukov. He's behind at the 25.
Yeah, that's fair. But Jack struggles on his first 15, but he has gotten a lot better at it.
Right.
But no, it just takes me so much time to build speed, to where by the time I hit the wall, I'm already like, I just got it. I just got all that momentum that I worked for. And then the wall breaks it up and I have to do it all again.
Do you have a mentality off the wall of attacking straight away, or are you still trying to build off the wall?
I try to build the first 25, like let everything stay smooth. But I'm a very feel oriented swimmer. Yep. So like it has to feel right. And when it feels right, it will have almost like a gallop in my opener of the 100 back.
Show me what you mean by gallop. Like, just explain that kind of visually with your shoulders. What does that mean?
Oh, just like a boom, boom, boom.
Oh, okay.
Just like
okay, a... So you're a little lopsided in backstroke then, huh?
Yeah. Those are my best opening 50s. But, yeah, I'm just... It has to feel right. And that's something that I'm actively trying to change because... It's not always going to feel right.
Right.
So you kind of have to learn how to force it. And that was last year's lesson at the Pro Series because I rely on easy speed for that first 50 and then everything else I have on that second. But when it's a random week in February, you don't have easy speed. So, but you still have to get that first split down or else the race is over.
Right.
So I just learned to force it even when it doesn't feel good.
And you have a great range of coaches at Cal that you work with now. You work with all of them. Is there anyone in particular that you work with? Anyone that you connect with particularly at Cal?
They all have their own, their own thing that I go to them for. I think Josh has been a huge help with my underwaters. Mm-hmm. Dave is more like insight for me. Like he helps keep me calm. And like, if I need race strategy or, what am I going to swim at Olympic trials? That's somebody I'm going to go to Dave for.
Well, there's two Daves. So you got to, give me the
Marsh is my technique coach.
Okay.
I trust Dave as the like overall coach. Like if I need anything, I can go to him, but if I need something specific, then I'll go to Josh or
Coach Marsh.
Yeah, with Coach Marsh, we've recently been working on my breath a lot because when I breathe, like my whole upper body goes with my head.
Are you talking about freestyle?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
it's something that you and that's interesting because you don't really work backstroke in practice. You do a lot of freestyle primarily. Why do you stay away from backstroke in practice?
I don't know. I just some reason have always been good at backstroke while never doing backstroke. I feel like it might be sort of along the lines of breaststrokers don't only have to train breaststroke. Flyers don't always have to train fly. And I think free and back complement each other. It's the same thing. You're just sort of flipped over.
So as long as you stay away from backstroke and the 200 freestyle, you're pretty much going to guarantee yourself a gold medal at the Olympics if you stay away from those things.
I don't know about that. But when I came back, I talked to Dave and I'm like, hey, why were my freestyle like lifetime bests, but my backstroke was, I won't say terrible, but 52.6 is not a great time for me.
Right.
And he's like, well, I think you need to start training backstroke. Mm. Like, what do you mean? I went 51.9 not training backstroke. And he brought something up that really like opened my eyes. I went 51.9 as a college swimmer.
Mm.
So I may not have been training backstroke, but I was still doing it every single dual meet and conference and NCs. Mm. Right. So I wasn't training back, but I was still doing more backstroke.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, perfect sense, actually.
Yeah, and I wish I would have thought of that sooner, but...
Well, you did. You know, you got 4 months at least to do a lot of backstroke training between now and trials, so it's definitely something that you're feeling like you're going to do more of in practice then, hey?
Yeah, I mean, not nearly as much as Murph or Destin, but I am going to start adding, like... I'll never do a backstroke practice, but I've definitely neglected backstroke. So I'll start, like, if we're doing 4 rounds of something, maybe I'll do 1 round back or 2 rounds back, depending on what the set is.
Mm. Now, you did get your freestyles down under 48. You're in the 47 range now. How much further can you go here? There are guys now kind of dipping under this 47 range, there's a lot of people winning medals around that 47 low to mid range, and you're not far off that. So, like, how are you feeling about your freestyle?
You know, I would obviously love to be on the 4x1 free relays, but I feel stupid saying times because everyone will pretty much roast me, but I do think that I could be a 46 split. So right, give me a swing. I think I can go 46.
Sure.
Which probably puts me around the 47, like 4 area.
Which is not far off where you are now. You mean you're 47.8, right?
Yeah. I think that I can definitely be pushing the 47 lows. I don't know if I'll ever break 47. Obviously, I'd love to. Who doesn't want to go faster? But I'm confident that I can be in the 47 mid to lows.
Well, I think the thing we forget about you too, Hunter, is you're young. What, 22? Is that right?
I just turned 23.
Oh, 23. There we go. Yeah, so it's like you're still super young. So to even contemplate 46, I mean, you got a number of years to get there. But like getting down to 47 low is something that could happen really quick, you know?
Yeah, I think just having like a full taper and not being on the end of my meet, a heavier event load than I've ever carried. But I think if they would have put me on the final of the 4x1 free on night one, I probably could have gone faster than what I did on night 7 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was a double for me. I had the 50 back, too.
Right. Right, yeah. Who was making the relay decisions at the World Championships?
It was, like, a bunch of coaches and, like, I'm not 100% sure who has final say on those decisions, but it's also not my place to throw those people under the bus or even, like, I don't want to talk bad about them. Like
Yeah, it's a tough decision anyway. Like you're going to leave somebody off. Someone's going to be upset about it. But do they at least give you a chance to verbalize, you know, kind of maybe state a case for putting you on it? Are you allowed to do that?
So this was a weird world all around. They sat us down before the meet and they're like, all right, who wants to do the 8 free relay? Mm-hmm. Who wants to do this? Who wants to do this? But after the prelim of the 4x1, they came to me and said, hey, we're going to leave you off of the finals. Your splits were, you got beat. Like, it was close, but you got beat. We're going to leave you off. Go focus on your 100 back.
Right, yeah.
And I said, look, I'll be fine with my 100 back. But, like, I want to be on that relay tonight.
Yeah.
And they decided that the numbers that they got showed that that I was not fast enough to make the final.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's a line call at times. You got to make decisions. You got to, there's always somebody that's going to feel like they get left off. I think ultimately what I've learned, and I think what you've learned through this process too, is, you know, in order to not be on the fence and in that decision, you got to find a way to create separation, you know, and sometimes it's like, well, if I wanted that spot, I probably should have gone 47.5, and then there would have been anything to ever consider, you know? So that might be the lesson there. It's definitely a tough call, and it certainly could have gone your way. And that maybe you would have swum faster for sure. It looks like, but at the time when you do get a chance, it's like, well, I just got to create separation with everybody and take it out of their hands and just be the number one guy. And they can't possibly leave me off next time, you know?
Leave no doubt.
Yes.
I remember I called Dave Durden night of. I'm like, I don't understand why I was left off this relay. And he's like, don't let your emotions get the best of you. The longer you dwell on this, the more it's going to harm your performance. What I want you to do is forget about it. You have 15 minutes to dwell and maybe write it down if that helps, but your goal for the rest of this meet, prove them wrong. Have the best meet of your life and show up and show them and teach them that you can be relied on.
You know, you've said it a couple of times now of some influence Dave has had on you, Dave Durden, and that's great. You know, he's a great coach, but what I really like to hear is that you're remembering it and you're taking it on board so that this is stuff that you'll fall back on in the future when you need it. You know, like, these are lessons that you're learning and it's really hitting home with you. The things that he's telling you, the things that he's saying are connecting with you. That's a very powerful thing for an athlete, is to have that connection with a coach that is telling them these lessons to learn, you know?
Yeah. I mean, my lessons have gone all the way back to Coach Worley and like Silver Streaks, which was my YMCA team when I was like doing swim lessons and such. But the 15 minutes came from her. She would always say, like, after the race, you have 15 minutes to be sad. Like, even if you get third at the Olympic trials, which at this point in my life, I didn't even know that was a thing. But she's like, you have 15 minutes to cry about it. But after that, you have your next race. Your job is not done. And so, I mean, I was probably 5 or 6 at the time that she told me this, and it's still something that I use today. Like, wow. We're always going to have bad swims. We're going to have performances that don't go our way. We're going to have meets where every possible thing that could go wrong will. And that's a part of developing as an athlete and a person. I mean, these are life skills that go well beyond swimming.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, if you get over finishing third at Olympic trials in 15 minutes, you're better than me, because it took me about 4 years and I had to get payback on that one. So that one stings a little more than most. But yeah, I get it. No, it's good advice for sure. That's cool, man. Well, everything good? You're healthy, back in training, and feeling good about the next 4 months in the lead up to this trials?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to San Antonio and training center, and just I'm getting back into my routine. It's taken a bit. I didn't have the best start to the year. Just I've been pretty inconsistent with my training, and Worlds kind of reignited that spark for me. It's like, okay, I'm not lost. It's not too late. We can still nose to the grindstone. Let's do this. We have time to get everything back in order.
Yeah. Cool. Listen, if there's any companies out there looking to back a winner, put their money behind someone, a born racer, someone that loves to compete, American born and raised, put it behind Hunter Armstrong. I'm telling you, reach out to him because this guy is phenomenal. Love watching your race, mate. I love your attitude and your just your carefreeness in a way. Like you're not oblivious by any means, but you just love to be a swimmer. You love to compete. And you certainly love to race for America. That's no doubt. So, yeah, I know there's dollars coming in to wanting to put some money on some people that are going to, you know, maybe get it done in Paris and get it done at the Olympics, and they like to kind of cash in on that before it happens. You're the guy. So if anyone's listening to this, get on Hunter Armstrong. I'm telling you for sure. Okay.
Means a lot. Thank you.
But, appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing this.
Wait, I got one thing I want to end on.
Yeah.
Sort of, you mentioned the carefreeness and how you liked that picture of me with my arm up. Mm. One thing that has really helped me sort of take on this new, I don't want to say ideology, that isn't the right word, but that picture is me giving glory to God. Mm-hmm. And sort of, I've learned through this past Worlds and, you know, my entire career that none of it's possible without him. And so that sort of allowed me to have that carefree mentality, you know, trusting in God that he's gonna, that his plan will come through.
Mm. That's beautiful, man. There's no doubt you got a God-given talent. He's given you gifts and you're using those to the best of your ability, and you're using them to honor him. And that's a good thing. You know, you're squeezing every ounce of talent out of yourself that he's given you. So, you know, congrats on that, man. And if that's what it is for you, then that's a great lesson for everybody. So appreciate you sharing that with us. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, Hunter. Good luck, mate. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Ciao.